the news.
Iran says the foreign promoters of violence are encouraging terrorism by keeping mum on criminal attacks targeting Iranian people and security forces. The Israeli regime targets areas in central and coastal parts of Syria with deadly airstrikes. And Moscow accuses Kiev of committing war crimes by executing more than 10 Russian soldiers after they surrendered. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's foreign ministry slams the international silence on recent terror attacks in the country, criticizing, quote, claimants of human rights for turning a blind eye to those assaults. The ministry says the silence shows that those foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran are actually supportive of terrorism in the country and elsewhere in the world. It says that terrorism is condemned in any form, any time and any place. The Iranian foreign ministry also called on international bodies to prevent the creation of a safe haven for violence seekers. Iran has witnessed a number of deadly terror attacks in recent weeks, which took place against the backdrop of a wave of unrest and rioting blamed on foreign-backed elements by Tehran. A terrorist attack in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan has claimed the lives of several people. Mourners from all over the province attended the funeral procession, calling on authorities to bring the perpetrators to justice. Mahdi Abbasian reports.
An incident that caused Iranians a great deal of agony. Iranian mourners took part in the funeral procession of the victims of the terror attack in the city of Izeh in floods of tears. In addition to expressing their deepest sympathy with families of the victims, the participants also voiced their support for the Islamic Republic amid the enemy's efforts to destabilize the country.
We have taken part in this funeral procession to send a message to the U.S. and Israel. They must know that Iran is not alone. We support the leader of the Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation. They cannot sow division in Iran by killing civilians. We will be victorious.
My fellow countrymen and dear people of Izeh, be sure that the Islamic Republic is strong and will definitely take revenge for the blood that has been shed by all the cruel enemies who are servants of the criminal government of the United States.
Also, a number of high-ranking state and military officials attended the funeral, vowing to bring the perpetrators of this crime to justice as soon as possible.
The perpetrators of this crime will be punished. A number of them have been arrested, while some others have been identified. Some of them attempted to flee the country through border crossings. However, they have been arrested. We will inform the Iranian nation about arresting the rest of the perpetrators in the coming days.
Officials say so far 11 individuals who've been involved in Izeh terrorist attack have been detained. Seven people, including a 9-year-old child and a woman, were killed, while 11 others were wounded after gunmen started shooting at people in the center of the city.
اینجا کاملا یه کار برنامه‌ریزی شده بود از 24 ساعت قبل میان
The terrorist attack was completely pre-planned. The terrorists broke the cameras across the city by shooting at them 24 hours prior to the attack. Then the next day, they opened fire at people at a crossroad from two directions. Their goal was to cause a massive bloodshed.
As they said, the enemies cannot turn Iran to another Syria or Lebanon by carrying out violent acts like the ones in Shahcharagh, Isfahan, and Izeh.
Iranian officials have strongly condemned the recent terror attacks in the country. They say the enemies of the Islamic Republic have now resorted to armed terror attacks that target civilians because they have failed to advance their anti-Iran agenda through creating media hype. Mahdi Abbasian, Izeh, Khuzestan.
The Iranian foreign ministry spokesman has condemned the U.S. sanctions on the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting officials and reporters. Nasser Kanani says that this is another example of the blatant violation of Iranians' rights by the U.S. Kanani said the U.S. is preventing the views of Iranian people from being heard around the world. He says this is while it allows various, quote, terrorist networks and media to commit malicious acts against Iran. According to the Iranian official, this shows that the U.S. has no plans to end its crimes against independent countries. The U.S. sanctions target the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, as well as its deputy for world services, which also doubles as Press TV chief. The European Union and Canada have also imposed sanctions on Press TV. The bans are part of wider sanctions targeting Iranian officials and entities over alleged human rights violations following recent riots in Iran. Tehran has strongly rejected those claims and slammed the bans as a clear example of meddling in the country's internal affairs. Author and journalist Arnold August says the U.S. is in no position to lecture Iran on human rights.
Iran TV, I think, is succeeding in carving a place for itself in the international media to give a voice to people not only in Iran but elsewhere in the world who want to tell the truth what is happening in Iran and the international situation, especially the unjust sanctions and the ongoing attempt by the United States and its allies such as Canada for regime change in Iran. How the United States gives itself the right to interfere in any country of the world that refuses to bow down to the U.S. dictates. The latest victim is Iran, not the first time. And imagine the United States, who is known worldwide as a country that suppresses freedom of speech. We have the example of Julian Assange. There are hundreds of political prisoners in the United States because of their ideas, and the United States is going to lecture Iran about freedom of speech? Is there a country in the world that has violated more human rights in so many places in the world than the United States of America, including in its own country, having established the United States based on the genocide of the native peoples in the United States, as well as carrying an ongoing war against the black people in the United States and upholding slavery now in a disguised form, and they are giving lessons to Iran about human rights? Come on now. How many countries have the United States invaded, killed, displaced people? Iraq, Afghanistan. Oh, we'd not forget Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Vietnam. There are so many examples. This country has a right, the United States has a right to lecture Iran and anything, especially on violation of human rights.
Israel has conducted fresh missile attacks on Syria. 4 soldiers have been killed and others have been wounded. The attack hit several locations in central and coastal areas of Syria. They were carried out in the direction of the Mediterranean coastal city of Benyas in northwestern Syria. Material damage was also caused. The Tel Aviv regime has time and again conducted attacks on Syrian soil despite repeated calls by Damascus to stop them. Syria says that these attacks are a violation of its sovereignty. It has frequently called on the UN to force the regime to stop the strikes. The Saudi-led war continues to take a heavy humanitarian toll on Yemen, with the country's health ministry saying more than 18 newborn babies are losing their lives every day. The ministry says nearly 40% of Yemeni babies are born prematurely every year, marking a drastic increase compared to the pre-war period. Yemeni media say the lack of medical supplies and the use of internationally banned weapons by the Saudi-led coalition are the major reasons for premature births. Riyadh, along with some of its allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen, coupled with a blockade in 2015 with the aim of reinstating it. Earlier, we were joined by human rights activist Firas al-Najim to get his thoughts about the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen.
This is obviously a very dangerous situation, and it's been dangerous since the day they started the war and imposed this blockade against the people of Yemen. And unfortunately, it's backed up and supported by the Western regimes, including Canada. Not that they only back it up, I mean, by supporting it, you know, in the United Nations and staying silent on this issue. And at the same time, they also help and give, you know, logistical support to the Saudi coalition. At the same time, they help them with their media as well, how to paint the picture as if they're coming there to support the Yemeni people or support some type of Yemeni democratic system. Same time, you know, Canada is supplying arms to Saudi Arabia instead of supplying medical supplies to the people of Yemen. You know, this is where we see something that is very controversial, and that shows a picture that these regimes are not truly working for human rights, and they're not truly working to help the people and stop these humanitarian crises. They're actually fueling these humanitarian crises. They're actually making them larger than they already are. And if they care so much about human rights, and if they care so much about humanity in general, you know, Canada, the U.S., France, Britain, all these governments, you know, they would, you know, they would impose sanctions against Saudi Arabia. They would, you know, have a no-fly zone in certain areas in Yemen, and they would stop this war. They would send in the UNIFIL forces or any other forces that they could, you know, to stop this war fully. But they're not doing that. They're actually watching the people of Yemen die day by day, and the suffering getting worse and worse.
Russia has accused Ukraine of war crimes over what it calls execution of several soldiers after they surrendered. The Russian Defense Ministry says nobody can paint the murder of over 10 restrained Russian soldiers as a tragic exception. This comes after footage circulating on social media allegedly showed the summary execution of Russian servicemen. The Defense Ministry says the videos are new evidence on the massacre of unarmed Russian prisoners of war. It says Western backers of Ukraine are turning a blind eye to its military abuses. Meanwhile, Russia's Human Rights Council says it will ask for an international investigation. Earlier this week, a UN report accused both Russia and Ukraine of abusing and torturing prisoners of war. Our correspondent Johnny Miller joined us earlier from Donetsk for more details on this story.
Ukraine continues to cross the boundaries of what's seen as acceptable by civilized states. While NATO countries continue to say that extremism within Ukraine is Russian propaganda, it's very clear that it's not. Remember, some time ago, a former British soldier who was serving as security for journalists in Libya told me that if it's dark and there's a wounded combatant, you just pop him off, in his words. So these war crimes happen within most armies, but this video and others like it are crossing the boundaries. And they're not only executing these soldiers, but they're also posting these videos online. And these are the kind of images that I'm reminded of in what happened in Syria with ISIS. Of course, ISIS or Daesh, a genocidal terrorist group which would execute soldiers and video it and publish them online. So this won't be the last accusation of war crimes against Ukraine. Almost on a daily basis, certainly on a weekly basis, we have this evidence of Ukrainian war crimes, which is always or usually said to be Russian propaganda. But it's very hard to keep accusing these stories of being Russian propaganda when the Ukrainians are openly flaunting their human rights abuses.
The UK government has unveiled an emergency budget. It includes tens of billions of dollars in spending cuts and tax increases as the government seeks to restore its economic credibility and patch up the nation's battered finances. Syed Purraza reports.
Transfixed, ordinary Britons stand glued to their screens, waiting for the news to sink in. After weeks of will he not, the UK's new chancellor has announced his economic plan for the country. Except for a couple of surprise rabbits out of the hat, such as a bit of more spending in the health and education sectors, it was what everyone had expected. Tax hikes and spending cuts aimed at plugging a nearly $65 billion hole in public finances created by the previous Conservative government only 2 months ago. Pretty soon, millions of Britons will be paying more taxes. A freeze on the non-taxable part of their income will mean millions will be dragged into higher tax brackets, and the cap on energy bills introduced by the previous government will be scaled back as of April next year. As if that wasn't enough, Britons are going to see public sector spending cuts to the tune of $30 billion. All this as the country grapples with double-digit inflation, rising energy costs, and a prolonged recession, none of which was lost on the opposition.
What does this mean? Family holidays cancelled, savings depleted, hopes for the future replaced by sleepless nights. And all of this on top of the fact that the average worker is earning less today than when the Tories came to power 12 years ago. The government has presided over the biggest wage squeeze in centuries. This was a crisis made in Downing Street, and it is ordinary working people who are paying the price.
As ever, the Chancellor, as did the PM before him, blamed Britain's economic woes on the pandemic and external factors such as the war in Ukraine. But many experts say that's not all.
Despite the government saying its measures announced today are necessary for balancing the books, there is no doubt that they will have real consequences for millions of Britons for years to come. Syed Purraza, London.
The U.S. is bracing for more drawn-out legal battles involving Donald Trump, with the Justice Department naming a special counsel to investigate the former president. The U.S. Attorney General says the appointment of Jack Smith is in the public interest because Trump has announced his intention to run for president again in 2024. The probe will look into Trump's handling of sensitive documents, as well as his involvement in the 2021 Capitol riot by his supporters. Trump has dismissed the appointment of a special counsel as political and unfair. He has already been investigated by a special counsel over obstruction of justice and possible election collusion with Russia, but no charges were brought against him. The former president was also impeached twice, but acquitted on both occasions. Earlier, we spoke to political commentator Paul Sheldon Foote on what he thinks about the new criminal investigations and how it will affect Donald Trump's rerun for presidency.
It'll definitely hurt him, which is the whole purpose of it. Of course, no one has ever bothered to investigate all of the corruption on the other side. If all the things that were said about Trump were true, he would look like an angel compared to all the things that Biden and the others have done in terms of massive for someone else. The split's there, and we'll see what happens in the primaries. But it's the solid Trump support is not the way it used to be. I'm fairly confident that the Democrats will stop at nothing to bring criminal charges against him, which will set a real American precedent. How many people are going to want to run for president in the future? How many parents are going to tell their children, well, we hope you grow up to become president someday? This is the worst treatment of presidents in American history.
The U.S. has redeployed its B-1B strategic bomber on the Korean Peninsula for joint drills with South Korea a day after the North fired an intercontinental ballistic missile. The joint air drills have already taken place, and that is according to the South Korean military. It was the second maneuver involving American supersonic bomb over the past 2 weeks. On Friday, North Korea launched an ICBM, which Japan said could reach U.S. mainland. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un oversaw the launch, warning that his country will respond to any nuclear attack by the U.S. The launch prompted an angry reaction from Seoul, which called for sanctions on Pyongyang, and Washington condemned the North for violating U.N. resolutions. North Korea has fired dozens of missiles in recent months in response to U.S. drills with South Korea and Japan. Pyongyang says the war games are a rehearsal for an invasion.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. military engaged in an aggressive program of chemical warfare codenamed Operation Ranch Hand. Now, from 1961 to 1971, the U.S. military sprayed a range of herbicides across more than 4.5 million acres of Vietnam to destroy the forest cover and food crops used by North Vietnamese. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Agent Orange, which contains the deadly chemical dioxin, was the most commonly used herbicide. It was later proven to cause serious health issues, including cancer, birth defects, rashes, and severe psychological and neurological problems. But the Vietnamese were not the only ones affected. U.S. soldiers unknowingly brought the legacy of Agent Orange back home. Join us for this week's Aperture as we meet three children of U.S. veterans who fallen victim to Agent Orange and follow them as they travel to Vietnam to face their demons. Here's the first part.
All I ever heard was war stories about how horrible it was and how violent everything was and that there was just death and destruction, and that's the picture that was painted in my head of what Vietnam was. And it scared me half to death when I was getting ready to come over here, to the point where I was actually shaking on the plane on my way here because I did not know what to expect.
Traveling here, someone said, you know, Heather travels back to the land of her father's demons. Vietnam is still a very scary, dangerous place to them.
I was actually very nervous and very scared. Several of my father's friends kind of scared me about some of the things that I may see and hear and experience. Their vision of Vietnam was a war-torn, angry place. Do you guys have any bottled water before we get going, just in case?
My name is Josh Kelly. I was born on August 18th, 1975.
My name is Heather Bowser. My maiden name is Morris.
My name is Rachel Harding. I was born in northern Indiana near Chicago.
My dad was Daniel Kelly. He was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he fought in Vietnam.
My parents had married 9 days before he had left for Vietnam. They said that, you know, if they had 9 days being together, that's what they wanted to do.
My father got his draft papers when he turned 18 and chose to marry my mother before he left. They got married, and 2 weeks later, he was deployed to Vietnam.
I've been trying to find out what exactly happened when he was there, because when I was younger, I tried to block the stories out because some of them were so scary and so violent and all that, that I just tried to not even listen to them because I didn't want to hear it because they scared the bottom of me because I was just a kid.
When they came home, they wanted to put the war behind them. The Vietnam War was a very difficult political time, civil rights time, and so wanting to put it behind them, start their family, and move on.
As soon as he came home, they chose to wait to have children. They waited about 7 years before they decided to try, and I was the firstborn. The string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast. It don't last for long.
It's the Colorado Rocky Mountain High. So my mother had two miscarriages. She lost two children. And no one in our family had had any kind of problems in that respect. So it was very unexpected. And then in 1972, my mother was pregnant again and felt that she had gone into labor early. She was not due for a while. They went to the hospital. She had already lost two children, so she was very scared. She thought she might be miscarrying again at the very late time in the pregnancy. They rushed her into the hospital, and she said, I'm in labor. And she was very thin, and they kind of said, no, you're okay. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You're not in labor. You barely look pregnant. She was 7 months along at that point. My mother woke up to my father sitting at her bedside telling her, and it's hard to talk about, but he said, Sharon, she's damaged. And that's what she woke up to. So I can only imagine how scary that was.
the doctors, as soon as I was born, they took me from my mom and they put me in a like a little incubator, and then they rushed me off out of the room. They didn't explain anything to my mom. They just said that there was problems.
Various doctors approached my mother at different times and asked what she had done to her child. What had she done to cause such terrible problems?
They brought her over to show me to her for about 5 minutes, and then they put me on an airplane and they flew me to another state, and they kept me in the incubator. And they put me in intensive care, and they had all kinds of doctors looking at me and checking to see if I was going to live or die or what the deal was, because missing my arms and my leg, they weren't sure what all was wrong with me. They started to take me to the doctors and stuff out there, and because they were big hospitals and there was lots of doctors from around the world and everything, they wanted to try a whole bunch of different surgeries and stuff that were like experimental surgeries that nobody had ever tried before. Like one of them was that they wanted to grow my arms back, and the way that they were going to do it is they were going to cut the skin open, break the bone, and then they were going to drill holes through it and put screws in it and put plates to separate the bone, and the bone would grow in between the gaps. And they said that it could take up to 5 to 10 years for my arms to finish growing back, and that it would be an extremely painful.
I want to go back to real quick to one memory I had in kindergarten. We were learning about our hands. This is your left hand, this is your right hand. And it's always a memory that I kind of laugh about. I love school. I couldn't wait to go to school. I was so excited. I wanted to read and do that stuff. So we're sitting in this circle, and the little children are sitting there, and I can just remember this to this day. And there was like a board on the floor, and it had a picture, an outline of a hand and another hand. And each child was to go around and take their turn and say, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, this is my left hand, this is my right hand. And so I remember just being anxious and excited to do my turn. And I went to put my hand in, and I just, at that moment, I was like, oh, okay. Because they had the outline, and my fingers didn't match the outline. And I was like, huh, okay, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, but they don't look like that left hand and that right hand. And that was kind of like, okay, I'm different. That's different.
Pretty much all my life, as far back as I can remember, I knew I was different, because I was always going to the doctors, and I would always see the other kids playing and stuff, and I couldn't really go play with them because I either had doctor's appointments or they didn't want anything to do with me.
I have lost 19 children. I never carried more longer than 8.5 weeks, and I would lose my children. I have hypothyroidism, the infertility issue, and psoriatic arthritis. Those are the three biggest ones that I have that affect my life personally. And my family could not understand, my father included, could not understand, where did this come from? Nobody else in the family's ever had this. How come you're suffering from this and nobody else ever has?
I've seen lots of different kids that had disabilities and stuff from being like in the hospitals and stuff all the time, and some of them are so similar that it would have to be from the same thing. The similarities in our disabilities are so much alike. There's no way to deny that it was the same thing that caused both of them.
These are the structural formulas for 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly known as 2,4-D and 2,4,5-T. From these chemicals are made a large number of closely related compounds, which are sold commercially for weed and brush control. The Secretary of Defense initiated a project to determine whether visibility in troublesome jungle vegetation in the Republic of Vietnam could be improved by aerially applied chemical sprays. In that country, jungle growth, swamp foliage, and roadside vegetation retains its leaves the year around. Consequently, it affords ideal concealment to guerrilla terrorists who sporadically attack the free people of Vietnam. As a result of these tests, defoliation spraying was placed on an operational basis. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster-acting types.
So my father says that he said that there was spraying of his base pretty regularly. I found out since that his base was practically sprayed every day, and that is also due to its proximity to Benoit. Benoit was the epicenter of where Ranch Hand worked out of. So if they had anything left on their missions, they came around that area and used it. The perimeter was hand sprayed, aerial spraying with the C-123 planes.
My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was stationed in the Chu Lai Air Base. And while he was there, he was exposed to lots of Agent Orange. They sprayed it on everything. It was in the food, it was in the water, it was on their clothes, it was on the plants, it was on the guns, the ammo, everything had Agent Orange on it. So he was heavily exposed to Agent Orange.
North Vietnam charged today that defoliants have produced many instances of miscarriages, congenital defects, and monstrosities among children.
As we anticipated, the Vietnamese doctors that we've met with very much share our concerns about the effects of Agent Orange.
Although that war was long ago, there is lingering anger about the United States' use of a controversial defoliant spread by American aircraft on the jungles there.
Milton Ross, a special forces advisor near Pleiku, has a son born without the tips of his fingers.
Frank Moore is nearly dead from cancer. He thinks the cancer was caused by chemical defoliants he was exposed to as a soldier in Vietnam.
My dad explained to me about how dangerous the stuff was because it would kill off big old trees and everything in just a couple of days. He would tell me the stories about how he would have to mix it and he would have to load it into the tanks and he would put the tanks on the planes and the helicopters and everything while he was in the war.
It's still causing trouble and all of the people that have lost their lives to Agent Orange, and this is kind of where it began. So it's very sad.
We found out that the rate of miscarriages, fetal death in utero, and birth defects are 4 times higher than in the exposed, among the exposed, than the non-exposed. We have carried out some more studies. I am now very sure, certain, that toxic chemicals cause many things to my people, to the exposed people. Cannot deny.
Yes, yes.
Cannot deny the relationship between dioxin with the abnormal outcome of pregnancy, among the exposed people.
After the war time, after 1975, his dad came back here and they have the first child. But due to the Agent Orange, she or he died after 10 days. The biggest child of the family is a normal child because he was born before the time that the dad came to the army.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible.
Yes.
Our fathers felt responsible
for us.
Even for in Vietnam. I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the
government.
The government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. he felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was four did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was, he was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues and he was getting weak, and he couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. You are listening to IRB English Radio. This is Asma. I study literature, and it's been quite a while that I come here to share my ideas with you. Not as a lecturer, of course, but as someone who is just as eager as everyone out there to find the road to a better life, which is actually the essence of our existence. Well, since I am a big fan of literature, let's go for a poem I have read recently. When I breathe my last breath, I'm wishing to meet you. I give up my life in the hope of becoming the earth of your abode. When on doomsday I raise my head, I rise for your discourse. I rise to look for you at a location where people gather from the two worlds. I'm looking for you. I'll be your slave. If I sleep on the bedroom of non-existence for 1,000 years, I'll wake up to the odor of your hair. I'll not describe the garden, nor will I smell the paradise flowers. I won't go for the pleasures up there. I'll run to meet you. I won't drink paradise wine from the hand of heaven's cupbearer. I won't need wine because I'm drunk with your faith. I'd go to 1,000 deserts with you. And if you, Sadi, choose the wrong path, you'll still be heading for him anyway. This was a poem by a great Persian poet called Sadi. He has got too much of poems with the theme of love and devotion to Allah. And this has been a great and a special school of poetry in Persian poems. There's a dazzling list of numerous poems that show strong devotion and unflinching faith in Allah. Now, let's move from poetry to religion. Well, when it comes to love and devotion and faith toward Allah, the language of both is just the same. The same sweet, delicate language that gets to the core of your heart. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in a poem that's more of a hymn, writes about Allah and says, "My Lord, if you torture me for 1,000 years, the candle of hope that burns in your name in the depth of my heart would never cease to exist." In another munajat, he says, "If you throw me to hell, I shall tell all its lifers that I love you." And the list is just never-ending if I start to quote the hymn and narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam concerning the theme of unshakable love and unswerving faith and conviction toward Allah. Now, the question is, what good will all this much of conviction bring to us? And how is it going to help us? Where does it come from? In order to get the answers to all these questions, let's come back after a blink of an eye. And thank you for being with us.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is The Drive to a Better Life, and we're talking about conviction and trust in Allah. In our narratives, We could clearly notice the importance of conviction and devotion to Allah. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, definitely, the usual small number of actions based on conviction is better than the number of actions based on no convictions at all. Now, what's the outcome of developing an unshakable, pretty much of unflinching conviction? He also says, Allah, with His justice and fairness, has put tranquility and comfort in conviction and has put sorrow and grief in skepticism and in lack of satisfaction. Now, regarding how to develop conviction, we could say that theoretically, there are three types of achieving it. Some people get to believe in something based on their logic. If it does not fit their logic, they won't believe it. Some others have to observe things with their own eyes in order to believe in it. Otherwise, they won't. And the third group has to touch the things itself, to get through it, to feel it with their entire existence. Till the truth becomes a part of them. They melt in it, that it becomes actually a part of them. And actually, this is the way that they do with Allah. They melt in the name of their Creator, of their Lord. Well, in a beautiful divine tradition, we read, "For my obedient subject, nothing is dearer than what I have arranged for him to do. Through his special duties, he gets closer to me, and I like him this way. When I like him, I will become his ears so that he can hear. I become his eyes through which he can see. Then I become his tongue by which he can speak. I become his hands through which he can hold things. If he calls me, I will accept him. And if he asks me for anything, I will give it to him." There's a beautiful poem concerning what we have said up until now. It says, "You were with me, I did not consider you as myself. Or perhaps you were me and I didn't know. When I departed, I recognized you. As far as you were me, I didn't know."
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
There's another poem that says, "So much I thought about you, I became entirely you. You came gradually and I slowly departed." Well, that is the other way of believing in something, which is pretty much sweet, deep, and very much unshakable. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, "Assurance and conviction raises the status of the man to a lofty one. All this makes it clear that conviction gives a way to trust and then to satisfaction. When someone gets close to Allah, nothing would knock them down. Nothing can hurt or destroy them because they know God is there in every single step they take." So we were talking about actually a creed, belief, and assurance that comes accordingly. When you believe in something as strongly, then it would create a sort of assurance in your heart that will never shake or fade away through different blocks that might get into your life. What's the use of it? We said that clearly those who are strong believers would never feel they've been hopeless or they've been miserable or anything can hurt them, destroy them, or knock them down. And that's it. That's another way to get into a better life. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is